Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Holy crap, what a week. Out of nowhere.
Wow.
Off the top rope. On Sunday during the Super Bowl, the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer released, to which I can now update, has become the most watched trailer in the first 24 hours of all time, surpassing Spider-Man
Crazy.
No Way Home. Absolutely insane.
Did you see that list, by the way?
Of the trailers?
Yeah. I was looking at it and it cracked me up because like there's like a top 10 mm-hmm. and all of them would be movies you would expect, like movies where you look back and it's like, wow, yeah, like that was a big cultural moment.
Endgame.
Most of them are Marvel movies.
Yeah.
And then the one outlier is it's like number 4 or 5 on the list and it's Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
Wow. For the trailer view.
Just sliding in there.
They must be doing something right because they keep making Transformers and people keep watching them somehow.
Seriously. I still want to see the, did you ever watch the Bumblebee movie?
Nope.
I feel like it kind of went under the radar. I never saw it, but I heard it was really good. It was like an early Haley Steinfeld appearance.
I actually heard the new Transformers in general was pretty good. Like a fun, entertaining action movie.
I don't even know when the last one came out.
There are a lot of franchises that I want to go through. That's probably not one of them. but there was also a trailer for the new Planet of the Apes movie, which is something I do want to go through. So we'll get to that later. Then on Tuesday, I think it was Valentine's Day of last week, Marvel releases a Fantastic Four official casting announcement for the first time ever. And in the most fun, clever way, as a Valentine's Day card with the mm-hmm. cast on it, which we talked about on Friends from Work Plus, but Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby as Sue Storm, Joseph Quinn, and then Eben Moss Backrack as the Thing. And we praised it on Friends from Work Plus for just how creative the announcement was and the vibe it seems like they're going for with Matt Shackman and the 60s era stuff. Herbie, which, by the way, my daughter was watching Spidey and His Amazing Friends, and in the new season, the Thing is in there and Herbie's in there. So that's where I now know Herbie.
Excellent.
Which is so excellent. Funny. But that felt like it kind of got the internet all ablaze as well. That was just last week. So we did two emergency podcast episodes. And then on Friday, I think it was. No, on Thursday, Disney announced that X-Men 97, the animated series, will be releasing on March 20th. And they dropped a trailer with it. And so millennials in particular were now ablaze on the internet about that series. So three announcements to cover up the disastrous performance of Madame Web. So smart move by Kevin Feige there and take the attention away, but what a week,
man. I think it's interesting, the conversation around Madame Web, because somehow Marvel is kind of being like Marvel Studios is kind of being loosely roped in to the disaster that is Madame Web, at least from a press perspective.
Not for me.
Whereas I feel like that only flows one way, which is kind of what's frustrating to me. Like whenever there's a bad superhero project, especially from Sony that has kind of a Marvel affiliation, it's the only studio left that isn't Marvel that's making Marvel things. It's like that still kind of, even if people, like I heard it in part because of the weirdness with the Spider-Man universe. Like I heard someone in my office yesterday talking about, how the new Marvel movie is terrible. And I heard someone else saying, what's the new Marvel movie? And he was like, Madam Web. And they were like, I don't think that's a Marvel movie. He's like, no, it's Spider-Man. That's Marvel. And I think that is repeated.
Please tell me you corrected him. Please tell me you corrected him.
If you're not doing the
Lord's work, then what are you doing out there on the front lines?
He was out in the hallway and I didn't correct him. And now I'm thinking that my failure to correct is going to be like Peter's failure to stop the burglar. And now there are going to be
following
some repercussions.
Orders. Golly, Robbie.
But I think that like that's on the audience side. That can happen sometimes. I think the critics know better, but they still kind of lump in the like, oh, like, you know, another Marvel thing. But it's just funny because when something like Across the Spider-Verse comes out, that's incredible.
Sure, it's not a mother.
No one's like, oh man, Marvel hits it again. You know, it's like, great job, Sony.
Today is a bold predictions episode. And one of them that I crossed off, I'm not going to do it, but I kind of was going to say maybe within the next year or two, Sony gives up trying to make films and lets Marvel Studios take those characters in some deal. But I didn't do it. But I was thinking about Like, if it goes so bad for another two or three, will they eventually just go, oh my gosh, like No Way Home, you make the movies, please.
I mean, I think that they, Greg and I were actually talking about this the other day as we were kind of looking at the initial numbers on Madam Web. It seems like they clearly have Kraven the Hunter lined up. Mm-hmm. They have Venom 3 lined up, which I'm sure the final Venom film will probably be a successful one for them commercially, unless just the moment has so turned. But I think that generally those movies have made a lot of money. I feel like that would be a perfect high note, relatively speaking, for them to end on. And then like, it's just, what's crazy to me is their live action movies have been so consistently bad for so long, arguably going all the way back to The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which in fairness, we kind of came out on slightly more positive than we had expected to when we were doing our Spider-Man rewatch. But even still, like any live action Sony thing that has not involved Marvel Studios has been kind of terrible.
Think about it.
Over the last 10 years. But all the animation has been like next level Oscar winning good. So I'm like, you've got such an easy way to kind of like save face and do an off ramp. Say like, we partnered with Marvel Studios and made some of the biggest Spider-Man movies, biggest superhero movies of all time that everybody loves. Let's just give them all of that, whatever they want to do with the Spider-Man stuff. We'll keep our cut financially, but we're going to, in terms of making things, focus on these animated movies that are continuing to blow everyone's minds.
Think about it though. Money drives everything. So even though Morbius was critically terrible because of that whole movement, it even went back into theaters. Like Sony was so unaware of people making fun of the film that it made its way back into theaters. So it's not going to take bad negative press. It's going to take bad performance at the box office. So if Madam Web doesn't do well actually financially, then I think there's a shot that if Kraven doesn't and Venom 3 doesn't, that then they go, okay, it's not working financially. Because I think they don't want to give up all the rights because they want to make their own movies at whatever frequency they want, not tied to Marvel, because Marvel may slow it way down. That being said, can you think about, as a Marvel Studios fan, how fun it would be to have all those rights back, to have Marvel Studios tell a Venom story, to start bringing in the Spider-Man universe better, and like a find a way to loop in into this multiversal era, into the Spider-Verse stuff with Miles Morales somehow.
Oh, wow.
I just think it'd be fun to pass the reins over there.
I wondered that last time I watched Across the Spider-Verse, which, you know, I think this is maybe an appropriate topic for today's episode, but I realized like they do kind of set like the theory of the multiverse in Across the Spider-Verse. On the one hand, I think is actually so far a lot more coherent than what Marvel Studios has done.
Yep.
In part just because those movies are clearly focused on that, and there's exposition there focused on clarifying what the stakes are and yada yada. But all that said, I also noted, not only do you get that reference in the movie to Tom Holland, Spider-Man, and Doctor Strange and the MCU, but the theory of the multiverse there, it could actually work within the MCU if there was ever any interest in doing that. I don't think that that would need to be anything other than kind of like a fun cameo, sort of in the same way that we got from Donald Glover in Across the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. But I do like that even just in theory, those could, like, the all the universes we've seen in the Miles movies could exist, like, within the framework that's being introduced within the MCU. And so it's like, even if you do have, like, even if the rights continue on the way that they are currently, there's still a way that they're all kind of now connected. I mean, No Way Home essentially did that anyway, mm-hmm. but I just like that that's still on the table. So I agree with you that that's a fun possibility.
I'm running out of words to describe just how special the last 10 minutes of Across the Spider-Verse are. Oh my gosh. From the time he realizes, spoilers here, that he's in the wrong universe and Gwen is kind of putting that together at the same time, and then the starting a band thing with that track. Oh my gosh, dude. That track, the last like 2 minutes of that movie are as rewatchable to me. Like, I listen to just that music all the time. That track in particular. Unbelievable. Unbelievable movie. By the way, welcome back to Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Kyle Sconewell, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. And today we are going to be making some bold predictions for the MCU in 2024 and maybe 2025 a little bit, because we skipped a year last year. But what's really fun about this is that we have receipts. We can now go back and follow up on the previous episodes and predictions we made, which you have no idea. You can't remember. I couldn't remember until I went back to 2022 and listened to our episode and found some really fun stuff, which, by the way, it's just kind of fun to listen to old things. It's fun to listen to us predict and project where we think things are going before the movie. And then now knowing what happened, it's kind of almost funny.
Yeah.
But it shows, it gives you a glimpse of where we were at that time. But today we're going to be making some more predictions. Before we do that, Rob, I want to follow up on the three that we did. We did three each in 2022, didn't do any in 2023. Here you go. I think technically I went 1-for-3 and you went 0-for-3, I think. So,
all right,
here you go. My first prediction was that Moon Knight will become my second favorite show, which I think is the one I got correct. Until Loki season 2, that was my number 2, even ahead of Loki season 1, which was often a debate on this podcast. So I think I got that right. I talked about how I was so stoked for that tone, and all that applies.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Your first prediction, which is interesting, is that Gore will become your favorite villain. And you went on a whole thing about how it was set up that way. But I'm going to say 0-for-3 because really we kind of left feeling like that was the one part of the film that could have been developed even more. Right? You wouldn't say it was your favorite villain now.
No. I mean, I don't fault past me for making that prediction because I think Gore is one of the more compelling comic villains.
I don't fault you anyways.
And it's Christian Bale.
Yeah, I don't fault you.
But yeah, I do. I think that I think of all the things that I love about that movie, Gore plays a really important part in all the things I love, but I don't think that that's my biggest takeaway from that. So fair.
Yeah, it's not laughable for sure, the prediction. I predicted that Thor would die, and I was obviously wrong. I will say, however, Jane dies as the mighty Thor. Yeah. So I was on to something as far as there being some closure, but no, Thor did not die. Way wrong. You predicted, and you said you almost tried to speak this into existence, that Nakia will become the next Black Panther.
Oh, yeah, man.
And that did not happen. So 1-for-2 for me, 0-for-2 for you. And then I said, and I think I'm wrong on this, I predicted that one of the post-credit sequences from that year would include Kang. And I don't think they did Kang in 2022, right? We didn't see him until He Who Remains as Loki season 1. Is that correct?
Yeah. I guess in Quantumania, which was what, January or February of 23?
23, yeah. Close on that.
Yeah, because we did like that, you know, we had two like Kang appearances in the post credits for that movie. But
right. And then your last prediction was that we'll see Gamora reunited with the Guardians of the Galaxy in the holiday special, which was very obviously not the plot. They were trying to, they missed her in that movie, which is the opposite.
Yeah. I still thought that that would make a certain kind of sense, but I, you know, again, seeing the path that they took.
Yeah, this worked out even better now, really, in hindsight.
Yeah.
The fact that she is reunited in the new film, but not in the way you think. Like, they don't get back together, which I think is the right way to go.
For sure.
That was it.
Wow.
Yeah. We didn't do one last year, and I'm excited to do this one this year.
Before we do that, can I make a quick announcement?
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, my gosh. Yes, please.
Because I think one of my bold predictions just for my own life is that a week from now, I will be a changed person. I will have undergone a radical transformation because of what I will have seen in a week. And I haven't talked to you about this yet. But
I have no idea what you're about to say. I'm like on pins and needles.
I'm just going to show this and...
John Williams and Yo-Yo Ma, are you going to a concert?
I am getting to go see John Williams and Yo-Yo Ma perform at Carnegie Hall next week. And
why are you going to be in New York? For this concert?
Exclusively for this concert.
You're just flying to New York to do that?
I've been trying to see Williams conduct because I know that he's not going to do it that many times. He's like always on the edge of retiring. And these, like, it wound up right after Christmas that we were able to get in. And I got this, I for the longest time, I didn't know if it was legitimate or not, because normally this stuff is so hard to get into for any price that's not like terrifying to behold.
Sure.
And then I got this in the mail, this invitation. And if you see, it is from George Lucas and Steven Spielberg because they are co-chairing this gala at Carnegie Hall honoring the career of John Williams. And because John Williams has composed concertos for Yo-Yo Ma, Yo-Yo Ma is also going to be there performing. I think he's certainly performing some of Williams' compositions. I don't know what he's performing beyond that. But they have provided a set list ahead of time. And I'm just so excited. There's like a lot of Raiders. There's Princess Leia's theme.
You are so funny.
Last Crusade, some E.T.
That's incredible.
I'm very excited about it. I didn't want to say anything on the podcast until I felt like it was actually going to happen. But now we've got flights. We got everything. So
cue the celebration music, really.
I know. Or it's like whatever the opposite of. We need to play the music that plays at the end of the first Star Wars when they're like getting their medals.
That's so fun, dude.
Anyway, sorry. That's so unrelated. But we like took our podcast break and then.
That's insane, man.
Everything's been crazy and I had to. Yeah.
I can't top that. Okay. Obviously. But can I tell you that I performed at Carnegie Hall one time? Did you know that?
I did not know that. I've never been.
My high school band won a like high school band competition throughout like the country to go perform at Carnegie Hall. So I played three songs at Carnegie Hall in high school band on trumpet.
Holy cow.
Isn't that funny? So I got
How
to
do you
see,
get there?
How do I actually get there?
How do you get to Carnegie Hall?
You mean physically? I don't know. I was in high school.
Practice.
I just followed wherever my teachers told me to go.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
That kind of tops it. I'm not going to be on stage.
No. That's amazing, dude. And think about if we also got to go see the Journey, through the MCU playlist live in LA this year, you'd be eating good. We actually reached out to Disney. They said, well, we don't really run that part of it, but she did say in the email that she's going to see if there's any contact. So maybe we can get a friend from work gathering at that event. Who knows? But that's amazing, dude.
I don't think we've gotten to talk about that yet either, but yeah, at the Hollywood Bowl, there is going to be a performance, like each night going through selections of the entire Infinity Saga, right? Mm-hmm. Did I read that correctly?
Something like that. Yep. In August.
So I think for people that listen to this podcast that are in the LA area, especially, that is something that you should look into.
We're looking into it, and we're not in the LA era. Okay, last thing, I swear, and then we're going to get into our bold predictions. We're recording this on a Friday. The review embargo for Dune Part 2 just dropped this morning, I think, or last night. If you're listening to this episode on Monday, I am seeing Dune Part 2 tomorrow, Tuesday night. You are seeing it, I think, before it comes out, for sure, in the next week or so.
I think it's the following Monday.
Anytime that a movie... I think this trend's becoming true. Like, Madam Web had few screeners. We didn't get a chance to go see it. And the review embargo wasn't till the morning of the release. What that is proving to be true, though, is that means they're not very confident. Every time that has happened, that has been the case, where it's like they don't want the plot leaked, but really it's not going to perform well, or they're nervous it's not good, and they don't want the movie crushed for weeks before it comes out. And so they just put out the morning of, hope people miss it, and then still go see the film. Then the opposite is true. Dune Part 2 doesn't release in theaters until March 1. Well, the review embargo, I think the actual social media embargo was like February 14 or 15, which is a good 2.5 weeks early. Wow. And the review embargo is February 21. So you can fully review the movie for 10 days before the actual release, which usually signifies they're pretty proud of it. Well, the first reviews, Robbie, are like spectacular. Somebody said it's two towers.
I was reading that last night.
Two towers-esque.
Yeah. I saw Two Towers. I saw Empire. I saw a lot of people just saying that it's this movie in conjunction with the first comprised one of the best sci-fi epics of all time ever.
Yeah, okay. So, I thought the first movie was so good, and I want to talk about it on this podcast and on Screensaver because Denis Villeneuve is one of my favorite directors. He's one of my top five, and so I want to talk about it. But the first movie wasn't, maybe because I don't have the history of the book, for me wasn't like spectacular. I enjoyed it. I liked it. I would never say that was my favorite movie of the year. But now the way the second one's being talked about, not only are we going to go see it early, I hope that we're going to have an episode available on Screensaver by March 1. So when you're walking out of the theater, you have our thoughts on it, but I'm now really stoked to see it. I mean, it's got Hans Zimmer, it's got Denis, it's got your boy Timothy Chalamet and Zendaya, and then it's got my girl Rebecca Ferguson. So it's tough. I mean, it's tough.
Well, and there's a lot of great new inclusions in Part 2 from a cast perspective. There's Florence Pugh coming in, Austin Butler is coming in, and what I did not realize because I had not seen the most recent trailer is that the Emperor is going to be played by Christopher Walken. Which I love.
Okay. So expectations are high there too.
Yeah. I mean, there's just a whole, I was struck by, Candace and I rewatched the first one recently, and I was struck by how insane the cast is for that movie. And then now it's being expanded and we're adding in some, I mean, just Zendaya and Florence Pugh alone are two of the kind of heaviest hitters in Hollywood right now. So it has all the makings of kind of a legendary film moment.
We'll find out tomorrow for me. I'll probably text you or post something on social media about it. All right. Three bold predictions each for the MCU in 2024 after a quick word from these sponsors.
Because this is kind of relating to the conversation we were just having about box office performance and reviews and whatnot. I think that my first bold prediction is that Deadpool 3 will break the record for highest earning R-rated film.
Okay, I thought about doing something like that. I wasn't sure how bold that was. I didn't do this, but I thought I was going to say the next... I was going to make a prediction of the next two or three Marvel films. Why are there balloons on my screen? Right? Do you see that?
I don't know. I liked it, though. I liked it.
How did it know to do balloons?
I hope that comes across on the podcast video. I don't think
it will, but just for anyone listening, I was about to make a prediction and balloons started going across my screen. Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Hey, thanks.
I thought the next two or three films might all gross over $1 billion. I was going to do something like that, but.
Oh, wow.
But anyways, break the record. Do you know what the record is when you say that or not? I don't know what it is off the top of my head.
Like the number or the movie that holds the record?
Both, I guess.
I think the record is like in the $1 billion range. But I know that the movie that currently holds the record is Joker.
Oh, really? Okay.
And yeah, I just think
you're exactly right on both fronts. It's Joker and it's just over 1 billion, just over it.
So, and
Oppenheimer's number two, right behind it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 960.
I forget that Oppenheimer R?
Oh yeah, for sure. There's nudity.
Wow. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, fair. But I think though that the first Deadpool.
Yeah. I'm looking at it. Yeah.
At one point broke that record.
Deadpool 1 is 782. Deadpool 2 is 785, so just past it, million. Oppenheimer, if it re-released in theaters, could probably pass Joker. But yeah, so you're saying 1.1 billion for Deadpool 3. All right, we'll see.
I think so. Just because if you look at any of those movies that you just went through, like none of those necessarily have an appeal to people that might not normally watch an R-rated movie or not as much. Oppenheimer's kind of different, but it's like, I think the first two Deadpools really marketed themselves as adult kind of crass films. And this one will be too, to some degree. But I also know that like if, you know, when the first Spider-Man movie came out, and there are some things about that that are very PG-13 in a way that a lot of Marvel Studios movies aren't. I was like, there was a conversation in our household about whether or not I could go see the movie because I think I was only 10. And I was like, I would have burned that house to the ground if my mom did not take me to go see it. And I know that, again, it's PG-13 versus R, but I have to imagine that there are some 10-year-olds out there that are just going to lose it if their parents don't let them go see Hugh Jackman in that Wolverine costume.
That reminds me of one of the best office quotes ever. Dwight's like getting mad at a client, like, how dare you, Bob? And Michael Scott goes, Dwight, oh, whoa, calm down. And then he turns to the client and goes, but if you so much as harm a hair on her head, I swear to God, I will burn this place to the ground. I will burn you to the ground. I think you're right because I'm the perfect example. I never watched the first two Deadpools and yet they still grow 785 million, but now they have the MCU crowd. So now they're going to get some people that didn't watch those films, but were like, well, now I need to see this one and they're going to watch it. So I think that's the last bump they need.
Yeah.
All right. My bold prediction. First bold prediction from Kyle in the MCU in 2024. Sometime in 2024, either in Deadpool 3 or in Agatha, and I'm going to leave this open to maybe some other thing, we're going to get confirmation that Wanda Maximoff is not dead.
Oh, that's a good one.
So I don't know if it would be like a cameo in Deadpool or a reference at the end or a post-credit sequence or really just an Agatha as like a follow-up of like, well, the Scarlet Witch still lives or... I was going to say you'll see her, but I'm not going to go that far. So I think you're going to get confirmation she's alive.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I like that.
Bold prediction number two from Robbie.
Yeah. So this is kind of cheating because we talked about this some on our Friends from Work Plus episode covering the cast announcement last week.
For Fantastic Four.
But having had some more time to think about the conversation that we had there, I think that I'm going to, my prediction is that the Fantastic Four movie is going to be set in an alternate universe. Okay. That they are going to lean fully into that and let it be as classic Silver Age 60s comics as they want, which seems like Matt Shakman's whole thing. And then whether that, and you and I talked about this piece in terms of whether it's the entire movie or part of the movie or where that leaves them. Mm-hmm. But I think that they are then going to wind up somehow coming into contact with the MCU. I think the question is going to be, you know, whether we're looking at a lot of universes by the time we get to Secret Wars colliding, where it's like you've got the Fox universe and you've got like now a new universe and maybe like the Sony universe. Like, if, I mean,
maybe that's, you know, how Sony gives up their rights. Yeah, who knows?
Hey, I mean, people have talked about the Toby stuff and Hugh Jackman as rumors. And so I don't know, like, if everything's going to converge down the line or if we're going to wind up with, like, just two major universes like you kind of had in the comics leading into Secret Wars. But at any rate, that is my bold prediction regarding Fantastic Four.
So, as we've said multiple times, now is a good time to subscribe to Friends From Work Plus if you're at all interested, because we're covering a lot of this stuff over there. We're going to be going through X-Men. It's going to be awesome. And secondly, we did do a trailer breakdown, or not trailer in this case, I guess a cast announcement breakdown of about 30 minutes if you want more in depth of what you're talking about. But after we recorded that episode and I put it out, I was listening back to it and I reacted appropriately when you brought that idea up, but now I've sat through and thought it almost has to be that way. Like I saw on Twitter, there were rumors that they're trying to cast Galactus and they're trying to cast the Silver Surfer right now. And I just thought, like, that would be so fun in its own world. And because of the multiversal saga, they can have the best of both worlds. They can have their cake and eat it too, because they can do the whole story in a different world and then still have it collide. But you just cannot set a Fantastic Four that was around in the 60s with Galactus that the world just didn't know about or didn't tell us about in Iron Man. You know, like, I think in a weird way, the danger of doing that, I've gone from, oh, that'd be fun, to it will be disappointing if they do it a different way, just because the danger of belittling the first Avengers team and Iron Man and his origin by putting something like this in there, like I was nervous with Captain Marvel and Endgame. I think this is the best win ever. You can have the whole movie exist somewhere else, and it'll be so refreshing to see all these characters. And then it will be even cooler to see them interact with the MCU at that point.
Although, you know, my concern there in the way they do that would be if they do wind up in our universe and they are, you know, it's just them and they've built out, like, if you do go into Galactus and the Silver Surfer and you introduce those in that first film, did those characters come over with them?
Maybe.
You know, or is that like a one and done thing? And then
I don't know anything about these characters, but isn't Galactus like a universe eating?
Yeah.
Okay, so couldn't there be some way that he breaks through the multiversal thing or something?
For sure.
Or that?
Yeah, there's actually, there's some imagery that comes to mind from the Secret Wars era-esque that actually kind of is exactly that. So I think, that's an option. And maybe that's it. Like, maybe that's how the Fantastic Four become, like, in the same way that Marvel's done a good job of this in the past. Like, they made T'Challa, like, they introduced him in Civil War, and then kind of right on the heels of the Black Panther movie, they then make him a huge part of Infinity War, at least Wakanda a huge part of Infinity War, and I think, like, very much make it an anchor property in, again, the Black Panther movie was already that, but within the MCU story. And I feel like that could be a way for them to do that here. Like, maybe it's not just that they happen to wind up here. Maybe it's like they're involved in the larger crisis.
Well, and the villain side of this entire thing is fascinating. Not only with the Kang drama, Jonathan Majors drama off camera, but correct me if I'm wrong, isn't kind of the whole point of Secret Wars is that it's not really driven necessarily by one villain, right? It's driven by these universes having to decide what they want to do with this conflict. There are villains, but I just wonder, like, are they going to try to anchor the entire Avengers Secret Wars around stopping a person, whether that be Dr. Doom or Galactus, which, by the way, Dr. Doom was almost one of my predictions. I didn't make it. Or Kang recasted or something, or a group of villains that get together and decide that's what they want. Or is it not even really about the villain? It's about the other universes and having to decide what happens here, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's hard about that, and what makes it fun is that it's never really been clear whether Marvel is adapting the 80s Secret Wars or the 2015 Secret Wars. And those both heavily involve Dr. Doom, but the premise of the first is a bunch of heroes and villains are magically transported to a random planet where they fight and see who wins. And it's just like the joke is that it was to sell action figures, because it basically is like what every kid comes up with when they're playing battle, with their action figures. The 2015 Secret Wars was the one that's coming after all the incursions. It results in like a patchwork world that is built of all of the different parts of the universes that were able to be salvaged and created into like one planet Earth where everything is like juxtaposed.
But isn't the point of the incursions before that is it's kind of like the Joker at the end of The Dark Knight, right? That one universe has to decide to sacrifice the other one. Yes. Otherwise they both die.
And that's the conflict that's leading to Secret Wars, which is what ultimately, like, that's the kind of catastrophe, is all the universes cease to exist, at least like on their own. And then the only thing that's left is this, in all of existence, is this one patchwork planet that Dr. Doom is, for reasons that we can't get into, is able to bring together and then rule over. And then so he does become, the whole reason I say that is he is the main villain of the Secret Wars miniseries in 2015. And arguably in the original, but it's just the original doesn't really, it is light on plot.
But you don't bring a character like Galactus into a movie like Fantastic Four to just have him disappear in the one film and that be it, right? There's no way.
Yeah. I mean,
So then is it Dr. Doom and Galactus, or Galactus is an observer, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's...
Yeah. Well, and Galactus is such a, like, force of nature within the comics.
That's what I mean.
He's not a great... Do you see that? Do you see my thumbs up there?
What is happening on Riverside? Is this an update? Unbelievable. That one will make the video because I'm using that camera. So there you go.
Oh, nice, nice.
Thumbs up. Can you do that again? Do it one sec. Can you do it?
Did I?
Oh my gosh. What?
Oh, it worked on yours. Wow. Can I do it?
So maybe if I celebrate like this, that's what all the balloons are from. We're just discovering this technology live on this podcast. Okay. Anyways.
Incredible.
Okay. Sorry.
My point being, I think that if they are going to adapt, like have a villain that reflects the comics, I don't think that it can be, it would need to be someone like Dr. Doom or maybe like it could arguably be Kang, but then, you know, that's where the big question mark is. Like I could very much see them putting him in that role. There's a connection between Kang and Doom in the comics. We talked about that a ton when Quantumania first came out. So,
all right.
I don't know. I do think it's like, I mean, when you look at the Fantastic Four comics, Dr. Doom is one of the earliest pieces of that mythology. He is, for the longest time, was the villain within the entire Marvel Comics universe.
They're going to have a Dr. Doom. Shout out Cam on our Discord. I do think it needs to be Killian Murphy, just because that would be so cool.
Oh my gosh.
It'd be so cool, especially off the heels of Oppenheimer, to then have him in our world. And
man,
you probably could convince him to be around for multiple films, I think.
Mm-hmm. Man, I know. I wonder if... I wonder if he would be...
Did you see Ben Mendelsohn, by the way, too? His
What's that?
Did you see Ben Mendelsohn this week? He also said that he now would like to be recasted and play Dr. Doom now that he's dead as Talos. He wants to play Dr. Doom so bad, apparently. So.
Oh, wow. That, you know what? The funny thing is that would be fine because he'd be wearing his mask the whole time anyway, and he was mostly in makeup as Talos.
No, but I think someone like Cillian Murphy would be, oh. Oh.
Do you think he would, do you think Cillian would do that? Do you think that
I don't know. I mean, obviously, Chris Nolan got him to be around for multiple films in the Dark Knight universe, but that's because it's Chris Nolan and they have a thing, you know?
Yeah,
But Marvel could probably pull it off as just like a, hey, do the Fantastic Four thing. It's one of the most legendary heroes. You will be, or sorry, villains. Like, it's one of the most legendary characters, I should say. Like, sell them hard on it and then be like, we're all building towards this. And Secret Wars is going to be directed by, you know, so-and-so. And it'll be awesome. Yeah. Trust me, blah, blah, blah. Like, just, you know, I don't know. But maybe not.
No, I could see.
He has been open to it in the media, like during his media rounds with Oppenheimer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he hasn't like shut down, well, not Dr. Doom in particular, but whenever he's asked about like blockbusters or Marvel movies or whatever, he's like, if the script is right, I would be, you know, into
it.
So.
Okay. I mean, and you do, you know, like we've talked about RDJ. I feel like they had a bond that developed on set.
Oh, that's so true. So he could, pitch him on that.
And yeah, because I think like, man, I've been so interested in reading all these interviews, and I know you've listened to some from Robert Downey Jr., but I think he, it seems to me that he, you know, really values his time at Marvel.
Yes.
I think he also was so, it sounds like just Oppenheimer was the perfect project for him coming back in terms of him kind of casting his own like role within Hollywood, and like I think that he and I've seen him and Cillian both talk about like what a special process that was, like making that film, how like Chris is such a unique director to work with, and how like grounded everything is on cast. Like I think he's a very demanding director, and so it's like I wonder sometimes whether like if RDJ and Cillian Murphy are talking, is because I've seen Robert make some comments about how it's nice to not have so much like green screen going on, like being able to act and so much of the performance being rooted in like actuality rather than being told like, you know, pretend you're looking up at a purple alien.
Yeah, but also I've seen the opposite quote from him. I told you that, like his famous thing in Variety or whatever was that he said some of the best acting I've ever done was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, but I just wonder, like, if I could see Cillian being a guy that really values the, like, the Nolan approach. But, so it's encouraging to me that he said that he's open to that, because I do think, oh, man, I'm, like, straight obsessed with Oppenheimer at this point in my life.
You are.
It's, like, the thing that I can't stop thinking about, so.
All right, my second bold prediction here. Don't know how bold this is. You can decide. I think before the end of the year, before Christmas in 2024, Spider-Man 4 will be announced. And I think it will be announced even sooner. Like the release date won't be that far off. Like I think there's a chance it comes out next Christmas, 2025. I think that there is stuff brewing already. And they're keeping it under wraps.
Interesting.
And I think if that were the case, I'll follow up. 2025 might be one of my favorite comic book film years, if that happens, ever. With 2014 obviously being another contender, and probably 2017 being another. I think if they nailed Fantastic Four with Matt Jackman being the director, Daredevil Born Again with the history I now have with that Netflix series, and then if Spider-Man 4 came out as well, there's more
Hidden Benson.
Yeah there would be potential there, and that's not even to say if like maybe Thunderbolts is awesome, maybe Captain America Brave New World is awesome, I don't know that, but just those three alone would probably do it for me. By the end of the year, Spider-Man 4 will be announced with Tom Holland.
Man, you know, what's fun about that, too, is I think that with the shuffle now, if I'm getting this right, it's in some order, right? It's Captain America, Thunderbolts, and Born Again, like all in one block now.
It's always changing. I'm nervous that Thunderbolts is going to get behind Fantastic Four, potentially.
Okay, I thought, yeah, that makes sense. I know. I think I saw that maybe Thunderbolts and Captain America were swapped. But I guess my point in all that is that can make for a nice little mini grounded MCU arc, you know, for like, which I think after Deadpool and Agatha might be nice.
Good point.
Like, you know, I think I'm curious to see. Also, the Born Again comic famously features Captain America.
Mm.
And I do wonder if
there's synergy.
I wonder what kind of cameos we might get now that, you know, like in a Daredevil series where he is actually in the MCU.
You're stealing my thunder for the third one, your third bold prediction.
Okay. Well, kind of on the cameo front, I think my bold prediction is that Deadpool 3 will give us a little more of the 838 Illuminati universe that we saw in Multiverse of Madness.
So he spends significant time in that one in particular.
I don't know that it's significant time there. I wonder if, like, because that is the universe where they are, like, they're aware of incursions. They've named it. They're cataloging universes. That's where the Illuminati, some version of the Illuminati existed. The reason I think it's a bold prediction is it's not a necessary thing for them to do. But I think if they were to do that and have one movie that links up the Loki multiverse stuff with the Doctor Strange multiverse stuff, especially given that I think we're supposed to get a little bit more Doctor Strange multiverse stuff in the follow-up to that film. I mean, at least based on the end credits. I feel like just from the perspective of creating a coherent narrative across the multiverse saga, I feel like that would be like a small but like welcome little like piece of connective tissue.
Okay, I'm going to jump right off that with my third and final prediction. And this is me just shooting my shot, okay? So I'm getting more bold as we go along here. Here we go.
I love it.
This might make me look stupid in 2 years when we look back at this. I think that Michael Fassbender will make a cameo in Deadpool 3.
Ooh.
Is that hot or not? I feel like you're going to see him in this. And I Googled it. It, like, he's open to it, but there's no confirmation that that's the case. But I could just see a world where this totally makes sense.
Man, I mean, that's a great one. And that's a great one to end on because we did have the X-Men 97 trailer. Obviously, we had the Deadpool trailer less than a week before that. And we're doing our X-Men rewatch. I'm reading through for the first time ever in its entirety all of the Claremont, Dave Cockrum, John Byrne X-Men comics that virtually every X-Men anything has been adapted from. And so I'm so curious what the next few years looks like on the X-Men side whenever it comes to like who does show up and who shows up as like a fun wink and who shows up
in a significant way.
Yeah, and maybe we'll stick around. Like like for instance, I don't think that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine is going to be someone that survives the multiverse saga. Like I think that from what they've
prediction. So like he's around Deadpool, he's around for Secret Wars, but then he's the casualty just for like by his age and his contract and all that.
Yeah, I think like because my understanding is they want to leave Logan intact as that character's ending to some degree. So I think that if they were to actually like have him move into the MCU in a long-term capacity, I feel like that would undermine that. which is fine and could happen, but that just seems to kind of contradict what they're saying. And also, okay. like Hugh Jackman is, it's not a character like Iron Man where he can continue to play him and not have to have the superhero body.
Yeah, good point.
He has to keep getting ripped. But I think like that's one example, but I have no idea. Like, obviously, I don't think Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen are going to be around for the long haul because for the same reasons. But Fassbender and McAvoy, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if they will, like, I guess we're going all the way back to, like, what we first talked about with WandaVision, where I just don't know, are there any, outside of Deadpool, are there any other X-Men characters, like, as portrayed by certain actors that you think are going to wind up coming in legitimately, like coming into the MCU?
Well, just to be fair, by the way, my prediction was just even a cameo. Like, I was doing the wink option.
No. I know. Yeah.
But just by preference, if we had to just choose that for what we wanted, we would both choose Fassbender as the one to do that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I don't see Beast being, you know, like the new. Yeah, it's not going to be like, I don't think it'll be Mystique, right? Like, that won't stick around. I don't think. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean that's the...
They would need a new Professor X, right? For sure.
Yeah.
You can't really have the X-Men without Professor X.
Oh, no, for sure. And they'll need a new Magneto. It's just whether or not that's like... I mean, I guess it would make sense probably from the start from scratch because they've really... delved into the backgrounds of those characters from First Class, but also Days of Future Past and also Apocalypse. Like, there's a lot of backstory that they're fleshing out before you even get to the Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen era in terms of timeline. So I feel like if the MCU were to just bring them in, it would be like they would either have to redo a lot of things. And I guess it's some of the same Daredevil conversations. But the reason I ask all that is because, yeah, that would make me so excited. I would love it if we got Fassbender in Deadpool 3. I would love it if we got Fassbender, period, in the MCU. They can recast him as something else entirely. He could actually make for a great Doctor Doom, I think.
That's a good point, too.
But so, yeah, that would be fun.
I would even be okay with a world where he is Magneto, but it's not the same one. Like, I'm okay with just being like, in this universe, it's the same actor, but it's not the same history. So you're starting over, but Fassbender stays the role. But that might get a little confusing.
Yeah, Maria Rambeau in Multiverse of Madness versus Captain Marvel versus the Marvels.
Sure. Well, that was fun. This is a good time to be jumping on the Friends from Work bandwagon, as I said last week. Nothing is set in stone, but Robbie and I are finishing a quick detour through award season. We want to take a quick sidestep to look at Martin Scorsese for a second. So I think I can say that this Thursday for Friends from Work Plus listeners will be a Shutter Island episode. So if you want to watch that movie and hear us talk about it. And then next week, again, nothing set in stone. We're hoping to cover Killers of the Flower Moon as we take this detour through the award season. And then we are jumping into X-Men in all the ways, the ways we've talked about. After that, get ready for the X-Men stuff. It's coming within the next couple weeks.
I'm just glad that we get to watch some actual movies and not just roller coasters for a change. You know, watch some Martin Scorsese, see what real film is like. Leave these theme park attractions.
I love Shutter Island, so don't make me dislike him. Don't. You're
No, I love Martin Scorsese. He's one of my favorite directors. This is our first time ever covering one of his movies.
Yeah.
But I mean that's the funny thing is he has made war with the thing that we have chosen to cover for 5 years on this podcast.
Yeah.
But I love his movies.
Well, and so I haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon, so I'm going in with an open mind. I'm going to give him a shot and see if it, you know, it is higher cinema. We'll find out.
Have you seen, what other movies of his have you, we'll talk about this in the screensaver episode, but I'm curious. Have you seen The Departed?
Nope.
Oh, you would love The Departed. You would love that movie.
I unfortunately know the famous ending, which is such a bummer to me. I wish I didn't know it.
Oh, yeah. That is a bummer.
I'd have to think. I'd have to look it up, too.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Anyways, we'll get into all this in this week.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing Dune, part two. So, holy cow, here we go.
Oh, man, I know. There's a chance I get to see it early this week.
Oh, please.
But if not, it'll... But I'm glad that they're... To your point earlier about the confidence, they are doing two rounds of screeners, which I appreciate. So
it's just been a really fun week over here at Friends from Work with all of those announcements, with the movies you and I are talking about getting to see, you at the John Williams concert. Like, it just feels like kind of like the new year's picking up, and now we're back into film world a little bit. So I'm excited about it. Thank you so much for listening, supporting. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can watch this podcast on YouTube and on Spotify. And we'll see you next time right back here on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast, and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 and top 5 products.